And I think we're going to embark on a multi-year period where public REITs will be back to not only being an equal playing field, but they will have the advantage to grow their portfolios through acquisitions and through taking over, you know, distressed properties from lenders or from private owners, maybe that can't cover the cash calls for their maintenance capex.
Hello and welcome to the REIT Report. I'm your host, Sarah Borkson-Quito. Joining me today is Matt Werner, Senior Portfolio Manager for REITs at Chiltern Capital Management. Matt is here to talk about some of the trends and dynamics he's seeing in the REIT market and what investors should be paying attention to today. Matt, great to speak with you again.
You too, Sarah.
So in Chiltern's latest monthly outlook, you wrote that, quote, "We're embarking upon an era where public REITs will gain market share, both with tenants and in size." Can you talk a little bit about what's behind that assertion?
Sure. Yeah. And thanks for having me. The past, I would call it 10 to 15 years, has been an interesting time for the public versus private REIT dynamic. If you go back to pre-2008 days, I would say that the public and the private real estate companies were on pretty level playing fields and were able to make acquisitions and compete for properties on a pretty equal basis. And we saw public REITs grow in their market cap and in size. And there was not as plentiful as IPOs as there was in the 1990s, but there's still, the public market was an attractive place to have your real estate portfolio. And then following 08-09, the Fed embarked on basically a zero interest rate policy that gave an advantage to any investor that was willing to use more leverage. And it would give a lower cost of capital to those that use more leverage. And the public REITs really had used their lessons from 08-09 to go the other direction and use more equity and bring their leverage ratios down to really prevent what happened in 08-09 from happening again. And the benefits of that really had not come to bear until today. And so if you look at the past 10 to 15 years, that even though property values grew equally, if you had the same property inside of a public REIT as you did in a private vehicle, obviously the property on a gross basis would do the same. But on a net basis, the more leverage you used, the better it did, and essentially rewarded those who took more risk. And we had a little bit of a moment in 2020 with the pandemic that it looked like public REITs were really in a great spot. They didn't have to worry as much about what was going to happen with debt maturities because they didn't have that many. But you also had the Fed cutting rates. And then obviously there was the stimulus that came in and really bailed out any of those that were going to have issues at the leverage level. And then the economy took off and really it was just a small blip. And today things are quite different and really different than what we've seen since 2008, 2009. Even then, the government seemed very willing to step in and help out the banks, and which in turn helped out all real estate companies of all kinds. And public REITs, this is really the moment that they've been preparing for. They've spent the past 15 years getting their debt ratios to be near all-time lows and have been very conservative in making sure they did not make acquisitions at peak prices in 2021, for example. And they're the ones that are now sitting in this catbird seat and not having to worry about the debt maturities and what that's going to do to their dividend payments or their ability to go out and make acquisitions, and then even sort of the basic needs of a property, paying for the maintenance capex. And what we saw in 08-09, to some extent, and maybe not even to full sort of fruition, what I would have thought happened, I think is going to happen this time with the public REITs having the capital to maintain their properties and their whole portfolio, to pay leasing commissions to brokers and do the tenant improvements that are really important when a tenant is deciding where they want to live or where they want to lease their space from a retail or office perspective. And we're already seeing that dynamic in occupancy trends, which I think will continue to happen. And we're still waiting for the sort of big moment for public REITs to go out and make significant acquisitions or for private companies to bite the bullet and decide that going public is the only kind of way to save their company. There have been several large transactions from private real estate companies to public at prices that would have been much higher a couple of years ago. But again, I think we're going to embark on a multi-year period where public REITs will be back to not only being an equal playing field, but they will have the advantage to grow their portfolios through acquisitions and through taking over, you know, distressed properties from lenders or from private owners maybe that can't cover the cash calls for their maintenance CapEx.
And Matt, just picking up on CapEx, are you seeing advantages when REITs across a broad swath of the industry consistently invest in CapEx, or is it really more concentrated in certain property sectors?
We're seeing it broadly. It's certainly something that is, I think, not as well advertised by public REITs. Maintenance CapEx, I think, is not a favorite topic of most companies. It's the money you have to spend to keep a Class A property Class A. And if you let it get to Class B, you save a little, you know, a few pennies today. But, you know, when you go to sell that property in a couple of years, or you go to try and, you know, release it because there's an upcoming tenant lease expiration, then it's maybe not as attractive, or you can't get the rents that you maybe thought you would. It's across the board. Obviously, it's going to be a little nuanced depending on the individual property type, on what you're spending on or what that percentage is. Could be as low as 5 to 10% of your NOI for ones like self-storage, but up to 20 or 30 or more percent of your NOI if it's office or some retail. But it's that sort of delta between who's doing it right and maybe who's underspending that is going to affect the occupancy trends and that sort of terminal value or sale price if you went to go and try and value the property a year from now or 2 years from now, which is going to increasingly happen for those that maybe have upcoming debt maturities or maybe are forced to liquidate their portfolio.
And can you drill down to individual geographic markets in terms of CapEx spending? Are you seeing a marked improvement for those REITs that are investing in CapEx?
Again, I think it's across the board, but yes, there are, if you look at some of the maybe more troubled markets, we looked at San Francisco, for example, which has certainly struggled in terms of attracting new office tenants and other ones that are deciding that they're going to go on this remote work experiment and lease less space than they used to, and it's become the lowest occupancy geographic market from an office perspective. And if you look at the REIT portfolios in San Francisco, they have much higher occupancy. And I would argue it's because of their ability to not only that what they have been doing from maintenance CapEx, but also going forward, if you're a tenant, you know, you don't want to have to be negotiating with a landlord that is in bankruptcy or micro-bankrupt, or it was going to put off fixing something as long as possible because they're still dealing with trying to get money from a bank or just don't have the capital to do it. It is broad-based, and I would say, you know, in some cities, it maybe is even more extreme than others.
Would you say that in today's environment, CapEx is really the best use of capital for REITs?
You know, it's one of those things that it should be important in all environments. The free cash flow that REITs are generating today would be great if it could be earmarked for accretive acquisitions, but that's just not really the case yet. Again, I think we're getting close to embarking on a period where they will have those options available to them. Whether or not, certainly dividend increases are preferred use of capital, but that's only after allocating the proper amount to maintaining properties. And I think some of the REITs too are saying, well, hey, maybe if we can't go out and buy more properties or upgrade our portfolio from a quality standpoint by bringing in new properties, go into the current portfolio and fix them up. And if there is a tenant that wants to leave, don't just try and release it at the same rate. Maybe you can fix it up and get better rents on that. I think that is a great use of capital. And I think given where share prices are, maybe you would expect some more share buybacks or some larger dividend increases because the REITs do have the luxury of having all this free cash flow. But we are seeing, I think, increasingly public REITs are, first of all, spending what they need to maintain the properties, but then also sort of reassessing their budgets for making improvements to properties that maybe they were going to do in a year or two's time or longer, but hey, let's do it now because we do have this capital available, and better to do it now than later.
Have you made projections about what you expect REITs to be spending on CapEx and how that compares to previous years?
again, it's not something that companies like to talk about and advertise, but they do give guidance on it, and we'll talk about it on earnings calls. And we are seeing increases relative to historical averages on their CapEx for this year and next. We looked at apartments, for example, which is one I think most people can relate to. And historically, that number has been between $1,000 to $1,500 a unit per year, depending on what markets are in. And the average this year for the public REITs is a little over $2,000 per unit. So they are spending more than they have historically. And from our conversations, it sounds like that's probably going to continue again in 2025. But when we look at our models for 2026 and beyond, you know, we see that going back to the historical average. And then hopefully from a free cash flow standpoint, they'll be in even better shape where they're having to spend less because they've done all these upgrades. And at the same time, we'll be getting the higher rents from getting the fruits of what they've done.
And Matt, you've touched on this a bit already, but looking further out, do you see opportunities for REITs later in 24 and into 25 in terms of taking advantage of possible market distress?
Yes. This is what we're all waiting for. We look back and in 08, 09, there was several high profile acquisitions by public REITs from distressed owners. And maybe again, not to the extent that I thought it would happen, but the public REITs were a very good backstop for the industry and for banks that didn't want to take over a bunch of properties from their borrowers. And today the banks are doing what they can to work with their current borrowers and pushing out maturities and extending loans. But the difference is instead of the Fed cutting rates to zero as they were back then and even in 2020, the Fed went on the quickest rate hike cycle we've seen in 40 plus years, and interest rates are going the other way. It does look like we're going to get some rate cuts towards the end of this year and the beginning of next year, and that will maybe help to alleviate some of the pain. But the ones that have already that were and floating rate loans, they're already feeling the pain today and probably hoping they can just hold on until the Fed starts to cut. But if the Fed cuts from 5.25 down to 4 and your borrowing spread is 150 to 200 basis points above that, there's still a lot of deals that were done, not assuming that they were going to have to be paying 5 to 6% in interest payments. And the numbers just don't work at those rates, especially if you are losing occupancy from not being able to fund the CapEx needs. And we're not at that sort of broad-based moment yet, but I think that one of the sort of X factors when I look at earnings estimates for the next couple of years that now I think fully reflect the negatives from higher interest expense do not reflect large accretive acquisitions that could really add to the bottom line. And I think that's something that people will start to pay attention to more as we get through 2024 and hopefully into 2025.
Great, Matt. And any other aspects related to what we've spoken about today that you think is important to share?
Well, I just think that the public REIT structure has been around for 60 plus years and has proven that it is a great way for all investors to participate in commercial real estate. It used to be just nationwide, but now across the world. And the CEOs and management teams are among the best in the world. And now they've got the best balance sheets in the world. And maybe the returns have not been there in the past 5 to 10 years, especially when compared to sort of leveraged private vehicles. But when I look at the next 5 to 10 years, I think that this is going to once again prove that the public REIT structure is one that should be in everyone's portfolio. And even for large institutions that have the ability to go into private, I just can't think that it's going to be the same as it was the past 10 years where, you know, 20%+ IRRs were the norm on the private side when you're working with cost of capital that now is actually higher than public REITs. And I think we're going to have a sort of resurgence of the public REIT structure, and maybe we'll have some more IPOs, and certainly these acquisitions will be the story.
Thanks so much for sharing your thoughts today.
Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode of the REIT Report, please subscribe or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.